Hello, out there, Seminole fans. Good to see you, Michael. I know this is a podcast, but for those that don't know, we usually film with our video screens on. You get a little bit more true reactions and see the body language. So good to see you, Michael. Looking good. How has the summer been treating you?
Summer's good. It's fire season out here, and we're not full of smoke, so that's a nice change this year. And I'm jonesing for some sports. This is kind of the dry time of the year. There's not much. I was watching Korn Ferry golf yesterday in the afternoon. That's about where we're at.
You love golf more than most. I enjoy watching it. I actually played a great course. If there are any folks listening to this who are traveling in the Chattanooga, Northwest Georgia kind of area, had a great time playing a Macklemore course. It's a private course, but they do these member for a day things, and you're up above the clouds about 1,800, 2,000 feet, and so there's don't go left. Cliff falls off pretty steep to the left. So hope that fits your swing, but. Yeah, if you're watching Korn Ferry Tour golf, Michael, I feel like you're ready for, maybe some college footballs around the season. You tune into that, right?
I've been paying attention to football recruiting, which is another sign of how far I'm down in the dumps right now.
There was some good Florida State had some nice representation out at the Track World Championships. It was fun to watch with what's his name? Trey Cunningham, the hurdler. And so there was some good stuff there. Several world records by US and other countries. But yeah, so football season is around the corner. I think it's 3 weeks from yet. Today is the seventh, 3 weeks from yesterday. I think kind of nice go. I think we're gonna make a bowl game this year. I don't know if you feel that way or not, but I will say, regardless of our success level, looking forward to a really good time going to New Orleans to wife and I are going to go and watch FSU play LSU there right before Labor Day. So that's going to be a blast. Any I've been to New Orleans before. Have you, Mike, anything that you've done before that you would say go check out?
I have not been in years to New Orleans. It's a wonderful place. I've got a family who works there at the Napoleon House restaurant, which so go there. And then I watch this. There's the newest what do you call it? Iron Chef. I can't remember the name of the restaurant. I'll have to look it up and put it in the comments. But the guy was a owns a couple sandwich shops in New Orleans, and it looked pretty awesome.
Please do put that in the comments. I love a good sandwich. And I'm sure that there's some listeners who, there might be some others going to New Orleans as well. So that's going to be a good time. Please put that in the comments. Any listeners out there too, if you come on to Tomahawk Nation and drop some New Orleans comments in the section, in the comment section, I'd gladly take them, and maybe we can find a way to meet up at the tailgate if you're headed out there. Because not you, Michael, but other folks listening. So I would love to meet some people. Speaking of all of the just, I think it's a transition from college football talk in the sense that you have undoubtedly heard and read about all of the conference, UCLA and USC going to the Big Ten, which spurred a whole nother round of conference expansion or restructuring talks of people, just I don't know, teams, leagues just straight up breaking away from the NCAA. And do we form these couple of power conferences? I think that you and I are not under we're not so delusional that we believe that basketball would ever drive those conversations. Basketball could certainly be impacted by those conversations. And maybe with a school like Duke or Carolina, there might be some interest, by another league because of basketball. As it comes to Florida State, would you have a conference that, whether it's basketball reasons, whether it's just general reasons, that you would prefer Florida State to be in? Would you want us to stay in the ACC?
Well, I do want us to stay in the ACC, but I also want football to break away and do their own thing. I think the best solution would be, let college football become whatever it's going to become. Let all the other sports maintain that sort of regional focus. I think there's a lot to be said for that, especially a sport like basketball where they're traveling, playing 2 games a week, minimum. it's, you know, you start having conferences that are set up all around the country, and it's, you know, it's, it makes it challenging for other sports in a way that it's not going to be challenging for football. But that said, that's probably not going to happen. And so,
or at least not happen first. I think that could happen eventually. Mm-hmm. We could, college football is already different from what it was when, forget when we were growing up, it was mm-hmm. different from what it was 15 years ago. And the sport's different. The hitting is much less physical. The games take way longer. Mm-hmm. I think we could get to a world where what you're talking about is happening, but I don't know that we're there yet. So let me ask you, if it's a world where all the sports have to be played together, we're going to subject, and you know, the money, you know, that the ACC is going to make way less money than some of the other leagues. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preferred conference?
Yeah, we got to get out of the ACC and into, you know, from a basketball perspective, I would like it to be the SEC or the Big Ten, you know, both of those conferences. You know, the Big Ten is, you know, just got great basketball top to bottom. With, you know, some of the Big 12 teams moving over to the SEC, the SEC is going to, you know, they've got so much money now that their basketball is really going to be catching up to what they've been claiming it has been for the past few years. You know, they're actually going to get there. So if we want to be in the best basketball conference, as much as I hate to say it, that's probably going to be the SEC in the end. And I certainly want to see us playing, you know, meaningful games every week. And so that's where I'd like to end up.
Yeah, I agree with you about the SEC the last 2 to 3 years has had a significant coaching talent infusion, mm-hmm. significant coaching talent infusion. I mean, even a guy like Dennis Gates going to Mizzou. I mean, we're biased, obviously, but that's a step up. And you know, Mizzou already looks like they're on a better track. You see a kid like Gigi Jackson, top ranked recruit who was committed to UNC. Now, I don't think he went to South Carolina because UNC couldn't afford to pay him some NIL money. There's more to it. He reclassified. UNC didn't quite have the room this year because of returning most folks, because they have so much NIL money that they're able to get guys like Armando Big Guy and Caleb Love to come back to school. But when talents like Gigi Jackson, when talents like Jabari Smith at Auburn last year are going to the SEC, that they are taking significant strides forward. Is it weird that I think that the Big Ten could be the most mutually beneficial from the conference and Florida State's perspective? That the Big Ten would get out of it football games in Florida. If they, let's say they took on Florida State and Miami, that they would get their team, Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, they get to have fans make Florida trips that they love doing already for bowl games. And they get to have just even more of a presence recruitment wise. They also have massive fan bases that watch TV, fill stadiums, travel well. Mm-hmm. I think you'd, in Doak Campbell, in the Tucker Center, you'd really enjoy having that kind of atmosphere. And quite honestly, while the Big Ten has never really, not never, the last 20 years have not been a consistent making these deep runs in March, Michigan has done well. And of course, mm-hmm. Izzo a few times. But I think they play a brand of basketball that we would probably benefit. I mean, I think that would toughen us up if you're saying we're out of the ACC. I don't know. Thoughts on that? I think it'd be a pretty fun schedule.
Yeah, it would be. And I think my preference for the ACC is, or the SEC is more like a 1A and a 1B. Like I would not be upset at all if we went to the Big Ten. I think, you know, Big Ten brings certainly some academic chops that other conferences may not have, and you know that's important for the school and the basketball, you know, like you mentioned, is top to bottom. I don't know that I would get as much excitement watching Florida State Purdue play football, even though Purdue would probably beat us at this point, but it's just
Minnesota or
Northwestern,
Indiana.
Although Minnesota is a great place to go watch a football game, I really don't want to go there again to watch. I don't want to go there to watch Florida State play.
That's fair. And baseball clearly would be a better home in the SEC than baseball, softball, than the Big Ten. The point you brought up originally, I have no idea what I played an Olympic sport in college, track, for those who haven't heard that before. I have no idea how we would go have meets if suddenly the team was in the Big Ten or the Big 12. I don't know. We're serious. We're not. I'll tell you what. We're not flying the 4x1 team to East Lansing on a weekend or on a Thursday for a meet. What you'd probably see with sports like that is they would still just continue to go play the Florida and the FSU relays or the Florida relays and pick and choose where they are going to be anyways. What do you do though with a volleyball? You know, what is the volleyball goes on a 5-day road swing to play Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern and Wisconsin. How's that? I just don't. Back to your original point, I don't know how you just need football to break away and do its own thing, right?
Yeah, and these conversations have to be happening, and you know, but we're not going to hear about them because nobody cares. It's, you know, it's all, everybody wants to figure out what's going on with football. But hopefully, you know, for all of those student athletes out there that aren't going to be generating a ton of NIL, and you know, all, you know, the track team, you know, that you mentioned, there's probably 10 track people in the country who are making a lot of money on NIL, and the rest aren't going to make anything. You know, you got to have a system that still works for them.
Yeah. Tell you what would be a fun, you know, you're right. Northwestern trip in November, maybe not ideal for a football team, but it, as weird as it is to say this, and then maybe we'll transition. How about a Big Ten road game against UCLA? In October, that actually sounds pretty nice.
That does sound good.
Out to the Rose Bowl for, you know, for your October 12th Saturday afternoon football. So
yes,
there could be worse things. We just need to ask to be in the USC UCLA pod,
right?
And not the Rutgers Maryland pod.
Yeah.
Interesting to say the least. There's certainly going to be continued impact on basketball and other sports. Would love to hear thoughts in the comments from folks as y'all see fit. Speaking of Florida State playing in the North right now, playing up in pseudo Big Ten country, Florida State was able to, I think it was supposed to happen actually last year, got delayed because of kind of that recycled COVID summer. But for the first time in several years, Florida State basketball is taking one of their international trips that, you know, that you can do every few years. They've been to Greece in the past. And so they're in Canada right now. They're playing basketball games against, okay competition in Canada, but nonetheless getting to practice, getting to travel as a team, getting to build that chemistry, which is huge for a team that has so many new guys, letting them, you know, get that, those extra reps that right now you'd not be able to be with the coaches if you weren't on your international trip. I don't know, all that seems great, other than maybe Matthew Cleveland being in a boot. Aside from that, thoughts on the Canadian trip so far? I think they played one game.
Yeah, they played one game, and it was, you know, as expected, it was a blowout. We started a walk-on. It was kind of weird. We can talk about that game a little bit more and what these games mean or don't mean. But it's great that they get to go to Canada, this team, because you've got all so many new faces that really need all this practice time to kind of gel. And Canada's a, you know, fantastic place. America's Hat is lovely. I've been there several times, and you know, everybody's super nice. It kind of freaks you out, and the money is colorful, so it's fun to go like buy donuts at Tim Hortons and do all that kind of stuff. So it's a good place for the team to go to, and you know, it looks, you know, from their, we know what they're posting online, that they're, you know, doing all the right things. They're spending lots of time together. They're sightseeing. You know, they're living it up as young college students, and also getting to play a lot of basketball, which is, you know, it's a win-win on both sides.
Yeah. I mean, I wish they could take these trips every year. It's one of those things that, you know, all the stuff that's changed in the NCAA, all the NIL and transfer wherever you want, whenever you want, don't worry about sitting out and everything. It's kind of like, really, we're still in a world where if college athletic programs led by, you know, the kind of leaders like Leonard Hamilton, the kind of people who are nobody's. I mean, the way that he turns young men into, you know, grown men, and we can't have them have an experience where they go somewhere internationally and get a chance to see diversity and more cultures and build bond, you know, build chemistry with each other and do that every year. I don't understand why.
Well, we've seen what Rick Pitino and his players and strip clubs kind of all yeah. come together. So maybe they're making the decision from that standpoint.
Yeah. I the time I've been to Canada was Windsor, which I probably can't say too much about those trips to Windsor when I was 20 on this pod, but Rick Pitino maybe would have been enjoying those. So yeah, touche, but I think they're great. And yeah, let's talk about it. So Cam Fletcher is back healthy, and he had a nice game in that one box score that we saw. I think he was 6 for 10, which is great. Naheem McLeod is healthy. I think the whole team other than Cleveland is healthy. And I don't know that we know too much about Cleveland. It doesn't seem like it's a season threatening kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's they're being cautious with a lower leg injury kind of thing. But something that stood out to me was Darren Green going 3 for 7 from three, mm-hmm. which is exactly what Darren Green was brought in to do. Come in and go 3 for 7 from three. Also added a couple assists. That's nice. Couple of rebounds. Fantastic. Go 3 for 7 from three.
Yeah, he took 10 shots and 7 of them were threes, which is great. Fletcher took 10 shots and 3 of them were threes. I think that's totally right on for both of those guys. Caleb Mills took 16 shots somehow and never attempted a three, which, you know, the defensive guys on this team probably, you know, are not prepared to handle somebody like Caleb Mills.
Sure. You know, he can get to where he wants.
Yeah. So, I mean, the box scores on these things are interesting, but it's pretty clear that the coaches are, you know, they're trying to put them into some stressful situations. You know, they started three freshmen, a walk-on and a first year transfer. They didn't start any of the experienced guys. So they're probably trying to get them, you know, into these pressure situations whenever they can. It's not going to be that easy on this trip because the teams are going to be overwhelmed. But the box scores, I don't really worry about them too much. The Canadian team took like 25 free throws and we took 4, you know, that's clearly something weird going on with the way the game was reffed or something. So, you know, you play a team you're supposed to blow out, you blew them out. That's great. Everybody played. That's great. We've got 4 guys who are sitting out. Not ideal. But for the 9 scholarship players who are playing, just getting the opportunity to go up against guys that you're not seeing every day in practice is great reps that you can't replicate.
Yeah, it is. It's tough that Baba Miller is not able to join this. This is the kind of thing that you're like, man, if they're, it's already great that a team that has so many newcomers is able to go on a trip like this together. I know Baba was supposed to play in the FIBA Euro Championships or something like that. And then he also tweaked his ankle a bit. And so I think it was one of those situations where maybe if he was already a professional, you kind of lace it up and say, hey, NBA finals, I gotta ride through this, but no sense in doing that. So he is, I think, just taking, I don't want to say taking the summer off in terms of not doing anything, but he's not playing in the Euro professionals, but he's also not coming to Florida State, I think, until after this. I think when the guys get back, he's going to be in Tallahassee and enrolled. So kind of stinks that we can't get Baba some reps, but I don't know. Just a good experience. We might be able to find some more information through the interwebs about box scores and whatnot. And then maybe when the team gets back, see if we could track down through some different sources, a feeling from how things went. I'll agree with you that you don't get caught up in the box scores. It's not like you're, oh my God, but maybe you pull some trends. We scored 32 points on 17 turnovers. How did Caleb Mills take 16 shots and not a three? I'm wondering if there were quite a few layup line transition buckets where a guy like Fletcher, a guy like Justin Gainey, a guy like Caleb Mills is getting hands on, you know, deflections and hands on basketballs, leading to ridiculously easy buckets, which is my favorite kind of offense, is defense leading to ridiculously easy buckets. So that is, that would be a trend I'd like to see across the whole trip, is 25 plus points a night on turnovers.
Yeah, and I would like to see who the guys are that are dominating on the glass as well, because they should be able to beat these guys, you know. And if you look at the box score, you know, Mills and Corin both had 7 rebounds, Gainey and McLeod both had 8 rebounds. So, you know, kind of gives you a little bit of an idea that they're, you know, something's working out on the rebounding side, and you know, the right guys are getting them. So, you know, that was encouraging to see.
Yeah. Well, like I said, maybe we can find out a little bit more about this trip. Certainly is helpful as we look towards the season. And so we'll take a quick break, but when we come back, we found out some news about the season that we will dive into. All right. Well, we just sort of recapped, if you missed the first half of it, Florida State men's basketball team is up in Canada playing teams that, you know, like Tenor Ngam played for a few years. So the teams that he was on in Canada before coming down here. And now we're going to look forward to the actual, we found out the non-conference schedule for Florida State men's basketball team this year. We had known, you know, we always going to play Florida. We knew already that we were playing Purdue yet again. Seems like that seems to just be our standard Big Ten opponent. So we're playing Purdue in the Big Ten tournament. We're participating in one of those preseason tournaments down in Orlando, but we got full confirmation of what our non-conference schedule will be. And I think it's a nicely mixed schedule. It starts off, the very first game of the year is Stetson at home on the 7th, which is, I think, a nice way to ease in. I would expect someone like Mills and Gainey, guys that have played a lot of basketball before, you know, to overwhelm them in that game. But and then it ramps up. We're going to play Florida. We're going to play Purdue. We're going to play St. John's down in the Sunrise Center down in that Orange Bowl Classic. We're going to play UCF in Orlando. And then we've got the ESPN Events Invitational, which has a nice maybe we'll talk about more as a separate in a few minutes here. But thoughts on just the overall schedule?
I like it. I mean, we got 11 games. We're going to play probably 6 that are easily losable. You know, so it's a nice mixture of teams we should blow out and, you know, teams that are going to give us a challenge. We've got that road game at UCF just right off the bat. It's second game of the season. You know, kind of like Florida State football is going to play LSU in the second game of the season. We're going to play UCF and you know, it's a good team, and it'll be a road atmosphere. So that'll be an interesting game. And then, you know, Florida is always going to be on the schedule. St. John's could be sneaky good. They've got 2 great players, and Purdue, you know, they've still got, you know, Zach Edey, who is the, you know, largest human being, probably bigger than Michael Ojo, rest in peace. But you know, Zach Edey easily dominated Florida State last year when Purdue won by like 30. So we're gonna have to you know, figure that out. So we've got 6 losable games, 5 games we should blow them out. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and these 6 losable games, I mean, we're not gonna lose all 6. That just, we know Florida State basketball well enough to know that guys like Cleveland, guys like Mills, guys like Worley, you know, we're just not gonna lose all 6. I think that if we could win 4, that puts us in good, you know, if we only won 3, I feel like we would need to, well, first of all, one of those games would need to be away from home. So we would need that to be kind of a UCF or St. John's type of game, because again, that goes back to the net. Like, you just get a lot more credit for winning a game away from home than you do winning home games. And then I would imagine that we would need to have sort of those, you know, checkmark wins against a big time program like a Purdue, right? Like, I think if we only won 3, it's like, well, Purdue probably needs to be one of them. And maybe the St. John's and the, and the UCF game, or do well, you know, win the invitational bracket. That would be maybe the other ideal path to get those neutral site wins. You know, let's maybe talk a second about Purdue. You mentioned they still have Zach Edey, but they lost Jaden Ivey. They lost, who was the other big guy? Was it Travion Williams?
Yeah, they lost Travion Williams.
They lost Travion Williams. Jaden Ivey is special. He was a top four pick. And Stefanovic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we play that game. When is that one? I think that one's November. It's usually those are in like that first week of December. It's November 30th.
Right after the tournament, after the Thanksgiving tournament.
That's right. So, and they're in a tournament as well. So you've got, you know, two teams that by then will have played several games against big time opponents. That's the one of those games that I feel like the Tuck magic makes it work out. Do you agree? Like, if you had to pick a winner right now, I feel like the Tuck magic at home, we win that game.
Yeah, and I think their tournament might be out on the West Coast, so they're going to be traveling. Yeah, they're going to be traveling a long way to get to Tallahassee, which is not the easiest place to get to from the West Coast. So that's good. And certainly, you know, we've got Florida and Purdue at the Tuck, and if we can pull both those games, then we'll be looking good. The over under on those six games is probably like 3.5. So if we win four of them, I think we're in good shape.
Yeah,
if we lose three of them, we're going to have some pretty serious work to do. And you know, that's probably, you know, one more out of conference loss probably means you need two more in conference wins, you know, to kind of make up for that. And obviously, it depends on who those losses are too, but. But yeah, if we can get through at 9-2, we'll be pretty golden heading into the conference season.
I would agree. And, you know, strange as it is, because Purdue and Florida are both at home, because we're 88-8 at home in the last six seasons, right? That's pretty good. Decent, sort of, kind of. Is it weird that, you know, that second game of the year you mentioned, UCF, believe it or not, UCF is one of those eight on the 88-8 home record. They're a solid team, and that's going to be a tricky environment. It's the second game of the year for a team that has a lot of newcomers. Is that a game where you'd hope, could Darren Green, the UCF transfer, maybe be the difference maker?
That would, we're kind of setting it up for that storyline. I mean, you've got the transfer going against his old teammates. He should certainly help with the scouting report. UCF, as you mentioned, is good. They've got CJ Walker, who's been in college for like 7 years and is a five-star recruit. And then they've also got Ithiel Horton from Pitt, who was, you know, probably one of the few good Pitt players. And so, you know, so that gives them a 1-2 punch, and you know, they're always kind of an experienced team that just gets guys into their system and builds them up, and they don't make a ton of mistakes. And so, yeah, so it'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, and, it will. Yeah. I kind of wish it was game three, but yeah. It's a nice early season test that, you know, win or lose, if you win it, great. You know, hopefully beat Stetson, win that, beat Troy, and then you're going into UF hopefully I think 3-0, and we tend to play well against UF at home. Even forget this, you know, the stretch that we've been on where we just played well at home against everybody. We tend to play well against, we beat UF at home when they had their national title teams. That sets you up, I think, for some nice momentum early. If you lose the UCF game though, I of course it's a disappointment. It gives you some really nice film that you can go back and look at before your game against UF a week later. So maybe win or lose, there's not, as long as you come back and get it done against Florida and Purdue at home, maybe it's not too damaging. But let's dig in then just really quickly. So we've got the tournament that is the Thanksgiving tournament. It's after we play UCF and UF. So we've already got a couple of games under our belt. It's right before we play Purdue. And the field is, I'm looking at the bracket right here. So the field as a whole is Florida State, Siena, Ole Miss, Stanford, Oklahoma, who's always sneaky good out of the Big 12. The Big 12 in general doesn't produce a lot of bad teams. Nebraska, Memphis, and Seton Hall. also, you know, Big East, Northeast basketball, usually solid. If we were, so we're matched up with Siena in the first round. Thank you, organizers, for that. I'd like to think we can get by Siena. The next day, so that would be on Thursday the 24th, we'd play the next day against the winner of Ole Miss Stanford. That, I mean, neither of those teams scare you, Michael?
Not really. I mean, the way this tournament is built, there's seven solid teams. You know, luckily we match up with number eight in the first round, so they're clearly trying to get Florida State to the final. Because it is, I mean, it is in Orlando.
The fans, you know, money, you think is possibly money have anything to do with that decision, Michael?
Might have a little bit to do with it. You never know. We don't want to speculate. Then we've got Ole Miss, Stanford, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Memphis, Seton Hall. All those teams are going to be okay. You know, they're going to be solid in their conference. None of them are going to be world beaters. And I think you can probably say the same thing about Florida State. So we may be, you know, slightly favored against pretty much all of them. You know, so, but it'll come down to, can you win that game on that Friday? So you beat Siena, and then you got to win the Friday game so that you're in the final, and anything less than the final would be, you know, pretty disappointing, you know, tournament, especially when you're going to have a lot of home fans there.
I think you nailed it. I'm not going to sit here and say that if we don't win the tournament, that's it, you know, close up shop on the season. Mm-hmm. It's going to be disappointing if we make the final and if we don't make the final. And let me hit you with this too. So we play at 11 a.m. on Thursday, the 24th. They've got to get four games in that day. And so we're the first. Ole Miss and Stanford plays at 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 24th. If Florida State wins, the next day, the game against that winner is going to be 11 a.m. on the 25th. So the team, you know, the Ole Miss or Stanford winner is going to be finishing up, let's call it 3 o'clock by the time they get off the court, or 4 o'clock, 2:30, 3:30, 4 o'clock. They got to get ready to play another basketball game by 11 a.m. the mm-hmm. next morning. And by the way, if it's Stanford, that's 8 a.m. for their players' times. So I don't know. I'm rooting for Stanford over Ole Miss in game number two. And I really would be, I think, disappointed, assuming that we have decent health, if Florida State can't get by Stanford in Orlando at 11 a.m. Eastern time, the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then the other side of the bracket, that second game, they tip 8.5 hours later. So it's like they play a late night game and then have to turn around on Sunday to play a 1 p.m. tip or whatever.
That's right. They've got the loser going at 5 and the winner at 7:30. Yeah. So yeah, if we won it, let's say we won that game against hypothetically Stanford, and let's say Memphis comes out of the southern, the bottom side of the bracket. Memphis finishes at 10 o'clock p.m. and has to get ready for a 1:30 tip.
Yeah, when Florida State's already had their nap and is ready to roll. Yeah, so the schedule looks like it was kind of set up by Stan, you know, for this tournament. So
I will say that final is it's Sunday, not Saturday, because of all the college football games on Saturday.
My bad. But
nonetheless, you're still talking 30 hours rest after you just played a game two days back to back. By the way, for all the FSU fans out there, that game, the Friday the 25th game, is the same day as FSU versus UF. And so I understand that there might be fewer fans down at that game, but it's early in the morning. So if you live in the Orlando area and don't have plans to come to Duke, you know, go ahead and put that on your calendar. Go out and check out Florida State basketball Friday morning, the day after Thanksgiving, and then get comfy on the couch for Florida State versus UF football later in the day. And then, of course, you know, take Saturday off and come back Sunday and cheer on the Noles in the final. So I don't know, Mike. I feel like I'm ready to go on record right now and say Florida State wins that damn thing. But
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, we'll see. All right, last maybe item of business here. So that good talk about this coming year. I'm excited. Believe it or not, that November 7th tip off, that is just 3 months. Today's August 7th, so that is going to be here before we know it. I'm already getting pumped. Let's go ahead and look ahead one more year. Always looking to the future when it comes to college sports and the recruitment pipeline. while this year's roster is set, we did in the between the time when we last potted and this time grabbed a hell of a recruit by the name of Taylor Bowen, a long 6'9", I believe his wingspan is closer to 7'2". Power forward is you know, maybe what he's labeled at. Defensively, he can guard a lot of positions, and he's probably the best player in the entire Northeast. He's at Brewster Academy up in New Hampshire, you know, probably one of the best players in the Northeast. He's a top 30 type of player overall. You're excited, right?
Well, I know that you're excited about him, and so since we're on a pod, I should probably take the opposite position and say he's okay. But no, this guy is gonna be he looks like a Florida State player, you know. I mean, he's 6'9", super long. Offensively, maybe not as developed as a lot of other prospects, but he could legitimately, this isn't just his hype, but he could legitimately be the best defensive prospect in the entire class. I mean, he is you know, just totally dominant at his level. You know, and they play some pretty good games, and offensively he does enough. You know, he can get out and run. He can lead the break. He can jump. He can, you know, it's he does a lot of stuff. He just doesn't have, you know, that half court game that you know needs to be developed in order to turn him into an NBA prospect.
He is going to play in the NBA. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know that we'll see him in Tallahassee for longer than a year. Does he have areas of his game where he needs to work on? Absolutely. Almost every college player, every guy who comes into college basketball has areas of his game where he needs to work. And you know, he is not a top three or four prospect. So there are some things holding him back right now from being just an utterly unstoppable player. But, you know, when you start talking about people who fit a system, and we've said for a while that, you know, sometimes it's weird that we continue to recruit some of these centers that can't get out and guard on the perimeter, but with the system we're trying to run, and for the system we're trying to run, you know, a switching, you know, versatile defense where guys really don't have a position except maybe if you're the rim protector, and then an offense that thrives in transition, that thrives in getting guys into corners to space the court so that then slashers can get to and finish at and above the rim. I don't know that there is a lot of players in this class or any class that fit our system better than Taylor Bowen.
Yeah. If you look, I think that Scott Drew, you know, Baylor kind of does the best job of recruiting for Florida State players. Like he just nails it. You know, they have these guys in the middle. They had Thamba this year, and you know, they've had, you know, some other players in the past. Who's the guy on their national championship team? Jonathan Chatrua, or however you pronounce his last name.
Yes.
You know, these guys who are just able to dominate in the middle, and they're only like 6'9". And so, you know, Taylor Bowen fits that role. If he's able to gain, you know, 25 pounds or something, you know, then he can be that really switchable dude who can guard 1 through 5. And he has just the natural inclination to, you know, he's jumping at the right times, and he's long, and he's able to make plays from behind. Like we saw with, you know, but Butler at Florida State, you know, he's able to recover, and just his length is just, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, he has the potential to keep filling these gaps that Ham is trying to fill with 6'9", 6'10" guys. And, you know, we'll see if that is a long-term thing, or if he tends to go after guys who are like 7'4", but, you know, it's totally, intriguing prospect, and, you know, probably the most intriguing guy from my perspective that we've since John Isaac.
Well, and so you always got me speechless here. I you're spot on with the intrigue with him. He needs to develop a more consistent jump shot. But I'll say this, his I've looked at some of his film. I hate to look at their highlights. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like watching highlights. I like to instead, actually, you can find, especially when guys are at places like Brewster, you can just go find games that you can just, watch a little bit of. And his form at free throws and just when he's not guarded, I guess, is already better than a Scottie Barnes in terms of it. I'm sure that we're gonna have to break down some of the mechanics, but it's already better than someone who would be considered a non-shooter in college. So, you talk about intrigue. Let me hit you with this. Is he sort of a cross? I see a cross between Scottie Barnes and Terrence Mann. He has Scottie Barnes was, I would say, a true point forward. He was a 6'8", 6'9", with much longer length and truly had the ability to run the offense. I don't know that Taylor Bowen, I have not seen him have the ability to run the offense. What I have seen him have the ability to do is block the shot because he does have a 7'2" wingspan, block the shot or get a rebound and start the break himself. He can start the break. He can take it coast to coast and finish the break. And he has enough of that sort of Terrence Mann basketball IQ to where he can play make for others when needed. And defensively, he's just bigger than Terrence Mann. I mean, he's 195 pounds now. I imagine he'll be closer to 205 when he comes in. Terrence was 6'5", 185 maybe when he came in, 6'6"-ish. It seems like you've taken the guy with Terrence Mann's skills, okay shooter, not great, could develop in time as a shooter, but put him in Scottie Barnes's body.
Yeah, I think the comparison is right on, the way that you're describing it. I think the one big difference is that, Scottie came to Florida State to be a point guard, and because he needed to demonstrate that skill to become a top draft pick, and so we were pigeonholing him into a specific role, and then COVID kind of screwed the whole thing up and whatever. But with Bowen, like his skill set is more like there's a bunch of smaller holes in his game that he needs to fill in order to be an NBA player. And so just the fit, I think, is going to be a little more natural than with Scottie. And he's not going to put up the numbers that Scottie put up. It's just, that's
Well, he's not a
not
top
saying,
four pro.
yeah,
He's not a
right.
top five prospect, right?
But he could turn into like what's his name from Baylor, Jeremy Sochan, who was
He
what, the
could.
10th pick in the draft or
He
something.
could.
And
He
yeah.
could turn into a slightly more advanced at this age, Chris Singleton, right? Who has the same 6'9" size, same kind of defensive instincts. It took Chris Singleton 3 years to actually kind of learn how to, I don't know, shoot a little, like make an impact on offense. I think that Taylor Bowen is, well, honestly, if you want the truth of it is, I think that basketball has evolved so much from when Chris Singleton was a player that at the time, Chris Singleton was a freak of nature. And now 6'9" guys in high school are just expected to play more positions than that. And so I don't know that he's more advanced. It's that just basketball is more advanced. But yeah, I don't. We're not going to ask him to play the Scottie Barnes role, and that's a good thing. I think that if Scottie was a true in the NBA, he's a real point forward. I think what Taylor Bowen might be is a forward who has some playmaking abilities. He's a forward point, maybe, as opposed to a poor point forward, and that actually might make him more impactful in our system to be able to like just blend into the system in a way. Sort of like Patrick Williams did, where he just blended in more into the system his first year.
Yeah, I mean, you need five guys who can get out and run, and you need five guys who can switch things on defense, and this is very clearly a guy who fits that system, exactly. And the Singleton comparison's good, but when Singleton was here, we were scoring like 55 points on offense, and it was a little tough for him to show out,
Yeah,
offensively.
Singleton would be way different in today's Florida State and today's basketball.
Yeah, so yeah, excited about him. Would love to see some more names like visiting campus to join him. But it's been a little bit quiet on the recruiting front. It's certainly a great piece to build around. And we also, we we don't understand at this point, like how many scholarships there are going to be available. So I think that they certainly have the ability to be a little more choosy this year than they were last year.
It's not going to be a 7-man class, 7 or 8 man. I mean, cause let's see, cause in theory, Caleb Mills could come back. Fletcher could, like, he has eligibility to come back. Worley, Cleveland, Darren Green, doesn't he have the ability to come back?
Ganey has the ability to come back. Maybe. I mean, they're petitioning to get him back.
They're petitioning that. So, you know, in theory, like, the only people who can't come back are, I think, McLeod and possibly Ganey, right? If depending on how the petition goes.
Yeah, Ganey, because he only played 9 games as a freshman, and then, you know, they didn't do the whole COVID thing in the Ivy League.
That's right. They just didn't play basketball.
Yeah. And so, you know, who knows what's going on there. And then Darren Green, this is his 4th year.
Right.
So, I mean, technically you're allowed to play 5 year.
Yeah. So in theory he could come back. Mm-hmm. I know McLeod, I don't think can, and Baba won't. Baba's going to go professional. Even if he went back to Europe, he'll go professional. So, you know, who knows? And of course, there's always a transfer possibility here and there. But so let's say we have 4 spots, 3 spots, you know, like you said, going to be more choosy. We were hoping to get that commitment from the Mateus Bizalis. I'm not not surprisingly, he turned professional and went to the G League or whatever it is. So, you know, that's going to keep out. He was a top 10 recruit. That's going to keep happening. For folks that are in the Tallahassee area, there's a kid, Chris Parker, who looks like a Florida State player, 6'6", small forward, top 75 guy, long, bouncy, you know, looks like a Florida State player. He's over at Quincy in Gadsden County. So if folks want to go, I mean, we are definitely recruiting him. If folks want to go check him out, wear some FSU gear, that's a guy to keep an eye on. And then you've got John Butler's younger brother, Jordan, who it appears like he is going to take an official visit. I mean, he's been on our campus a number of times with his brother. I don't feel like we're necessarily in the top 2 though right now. It seems like an Auburn commit to me, but other than that, like you said, sort of have a lot of offers out, but a lot of coals in the fire, but not a lot of flames, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Parker would be great. He's, you know, anytime you got a local kid who is a top 100 solid recruit, you want to land him, but you know, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, if you told me that we grabbed Taylor Bowen and Chris Parker, and let's say we had one more open ship, man, I'd say hold that for the best transfer that you can get coming next year. Cause you know, get Taylor Bowen, Chris Parker, grab a transfer and let's I mean, that would be a really nice class. That'd be a really nice class to fill out around Corin and Chandler Jackson and Tom House. And, you know, maybe Worley stays or something. That would be heck of a lineup. So, all right. Well, it's been good catching up. Maybe a commit will come out of the blue, or maybe we'll hop back on after the Canada trip and when we get a little word back from how things are going. But I feel like now that we're 3 months out, you can start to expect to hear from us at least once a month. Anything else? Any Corn Ferry news we need to know about, Michael?
Well, we got our guy Vincent Norman, who is right on the cusp of making it to the PGA Tour. So. We'll know in a week.
FSU alum Vincent Norman, for those that don't watch the Corn Ferry Tour on Friday afternoons.
Yeah, my wife said, "How come I haven't heard of any of these golfers?" I'm like, "Well, this is kind of like the minor leagues of golf."
Yeah,
she said, "You're watching minor league golf."
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Well, good to chat, and we will hopefully we'll be back with some more fun topics and good news soon. For Michael, I'm Matt. Go Noles.